Welcome to Talk Iran. This is Saman Askari. Today on the podcast, Who Man Matched. Iranian-American journalist and author, Hooman Majd was born in Tehran but lived abroad from infancy with his family who were in the diplomatic service. He was educated in England and the U.S. and stayed in the United States after the Islamic Revolution of 1979. Hooman had a long career in the entertainment business before devoting himself to writing and journalism full-time. His New York Times best-selling book, The Ayatollah Begs to Differ, was published in 2008, followed by his book, The Ayatollah's Democracy, which was published in the fall of 2010. His latest book, The Ministry of Guidance Invites You to Not Stay, was published in the U.S. and the U.K. in November 2013. He has also written for The New York Times, The New Yorker, Time, Vanity Fair, Foreign Policy, and other publications too numerous to list. A keen observer of Iranian society, he details his interactions with Iranian people from all walks of life in his writings, from supporters of the Islamic Republic and the deeply pious to the wealthy and more secular segments of society. He also has a knack for breaking down the meaning of certain Iranian concepts and words, such as taaruf, by providing historical and anecdotal context. Hooman has at times been criticized for his connection to various figures within the Islamic Republic and for having been a translator to Iranian presidents who have visited the United States. I ask for his response to this criticism in our conversation. We also talk about the current level of support the government has inside Iran, the Iranian revolution and the current struggles of the Iranian people, democracy and secularism within the Iranian context, the role of the U.S. and the Iranian diaspora in regards to Iran and other topics. So without further ado, let's listen into my conversation with Hooman Majd. Let's get started here. So I just finished reading your book, The Ayatollah Begs to Differ.
Oh, my first book. Okay.
Yeah, your first book. I know you have two more books. They're on my reading list. I found a couple of things really striking. The first thing was that you are really good at mingling with all types of different people. It was amazing to see how you went from hanging out with ultra-conservative family in Rome, and then you went to these parties in North Tehran, and then you came back to the U.S. and appeared on the Bill Maher show and all of that. So that was really fascinating. I always thought of myself as being really flexible in terms of being able to be fully Iranian and fully American at the same time, but I think you'd take it to a whole new level. I guess my question for you, the first question here is, given your knowledge of Iranian society, do you think there has been a shift in the level of support or in the landscape of support for the regime, its framework and all of that, given recent developments? You know, for example, we had the recent protests last month and a lot of people were chanting anti-regime slogans, and these were people that weren't necessarily from North Tehran.
Right, right.
So I want to get your thoughts around, you know, how popular the regime is currently and if the tides are sort of turning.
Well, I don't know if the tides are turning. I mean, certainly the regime has lost, if you want to call it a regime, a system, whatever you want to call it. The Iranians don't like to be called a regime because a regime has a negative connotation that it's undemocratic. But nonetheless, in America, we call it a regime. Most people do anyway. Yeah, no, I would say that it's lost some credibility. I mean, it's lost credibility among some of its supporters starting in 2009, began to lose credibility starting in 2009 with the Green Movement and the protests, even though the Green Movement specifically, at least the leaders of the Green Movement, were not against the regime per se, but more against just the election and, you know, a more open society. They were for a more open and more democratic society. But I think, yes, over time, and certainly in the recent in recent days and months, there has been probably a kind of diminishing of support, although it's impossible to say how many people actually do fully support the regime at any given time. I think it was always impossible to say because there hasn't been, since the referendum of 1979, there hasn't been a free referendum saying, you know, what kind of system, political system do you want? So 40 years later, it's kind of hard to say. But I would say that there's still a substantial support. When I say substantial, 25% could be substantial in a country like Iran. It may not be the majority, but it can be substantial. It's a hardcore group of people who are dependent upon the system or believe enough in the theocratic aspects and believe that there should be a theocracy in accordance with their, you know, Shia beliefs. They're armed. I mean, they're people who are the Basij and the Revolutionary Guard. These people are not that support could be enough to keep the system intact for years and years and years. That's also assuming there has to be some change. I don't think there's any question that there has to be reform in Iran in order for it to survive in the long term, because without reform, without getting rid of corruption, without, or at least reducing the level of corruption, which has gotten worse and worse apparently in recent years, according to what we read, and without fixing people's, you know, daily economic issues and their some of their social issues, if not all of their social issues, you know, no system can survive forever. But yeah. It's a long answer to your question, but the answer to your question is actually, I don't know what the level of support is. I was trying to make myself sound smart by giving all these. But, you know, the answer is no one really knows, because there isn't a way to gauge. But we're wrong to believe that because there's protests or, you know, a few hundred or a few thousand people shout, even if they're from the different classes in society, down with the regime or whatever, or within those group of protesters, there are a number of subset of protesters who are shouting down with the regime. That means they're, you know, the regime has lost its base of support. I don't think that's the case at this point. And we in the diasporas, particularly those who've, you know, you lived in Iran longer than I did, and I've been abroad all my life. It's easy for us to think, oh, well, Iranians, you look at, you know, like you say, the parties in North Tehran, you look at people who are secular, and you go, it's easy to say, well, of course, you know, this regime is just going to not last. People are going to want exactly what we have in the West. But then you do go and witness the way people live and the religiosity and the way that there is a conservative strain in Iran, which always existed during the Shah's time. And you say, well, it's not that simple. There's also an Iranian stubbornness, and there's a credibility issue as well for Iran. If you have a revolution based on not being subservient to either East or West, then the minute you give in to the West on something or give in to the East, in other words, the communist system or the capitalist system, then your credibility as a revolution is gone. And Iran is a revolution. It's still a revolution. I mean, the supreme leader is not the supreme leader of Iran. He's the supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution. That's his title. We still have a revolution, a revolutionary government.
So does that mean that the system always needs an America or some other power for it to stand up against and for it to define its character against?
Yes, if those great powers, whether it's Russia, China, or America, demand of Iran something that Iran doesn't want to give. Right. If it does give in to either of any of those greater powers, whether it's or even European powers, then yes, no, it can no longer be. The revolution is over at that point. And I think among its own people, the revolution is over. I mean, look, even on this nuclear deal, Ahmadinejad, who was the previous president, derided the deal and derided his successor for having given in to the Americans. Whereas, you know, Trump thinks that America gave in to Iran. People like Ahmadinejad, who consider themselves true revolutionaries and followers of Khomeini, considered giving any kind of concession to the Americans as giving in. So now he's coming back into the political sphere. I don't know if you see, he's tweeting, right. He's Instagramming, all this stuff. maybe he wants to run again for president. Who knows? But anyway, the point being that, the revolution is over the minute the majority of the people who support the revolution, let's say it's 25 or 30% of the entire population support the system. When the majority of those people think that Iran has given in on the very basic precept, which is to not be subservient to any greater power, to have full independence and rights and dignity of a nation, the great nation of Iran, as Iranians consider. The minute that's gone, the revolution is gone, and then, yes, it will collapse.
So if we can go back 40 years to when the revolution happened and those principles, obviously it was a very popular revolution at the time. Mm-hmm. People felt like they were unshackling themselves from the various powers, U.S. especially.
And a dictator.
Right. And they were sort of reclaiming the Iranian identity, or the Shia identity, which is sort of inextricable from the Iranian identity. But if we look at what's happening today, Iran is not exactly a bastion of freedom and opportunity, and people are not necessarily happy. We can go down the list of statistics and all of that, sure. And I'm sure you're familiar with all of those. I mean, women's rights stands out. You know, mm-hmm. A woman can't leave the country without the permission of her husband, and, you know, a whole host of things that people in other places would find ridiculous, right? And even on the economic side, people are struggling heavily.
Sure.
We can lay the blame at the feet of America and the sanctions, and we can go on and on about that. But at some point, something started not going right. Is that what happened?
No, I don't think it's something not going right. I think that, you know, the revolution was popular not only because of Islam and Shiism and the people who support and continue to this day, to the conservatives who support that system. It was popular because the vast majority of Iranians at that time living inside Iran wanted exactly what you said, to get rid of being, you know, a greater power being subservient to greater, in that case it was the U.S., but also a dictator where they felt there was no political freedom and they couldn't express themselves politically. They were afraid of the secret police. Social rights were all there. They all had all the social freedoms they wanted, but they didn't have political freedoms. They didn't necessarily want what this system is. I mean, as we know from the infighting after the revolution, we know the Mujahideen were part of the revolution. Then Rajavi broke from Khomeini. So not everybody was hoping for an Islamic system as it is today. In fact, there was huge protests by women. At the very beginning of the revolution, women were not obligated to wear headscarves. And then when the system decided that they were obligated, there was a huge protest. Millions of women came out on the streets. So what the system evolved into is not what people at the time necessarily wanted. Some people did, but not everybody who fought against the Shah or was against the Shah or sat back and said, yeah, the Shah, yeah, I'm not like necessarily political, but if the Shah goes, maybe there'll be a better democratic system. Well, why not? Why wouldn't we want a better democratic system? Why wouldn't anybody want a better democratic system? And so those people are disappointed, obviously. And many of them, such as your family, left Iran because they were disappointed. Otherwise, they would have stayed.
Right.
As we know, there are two million plus have left Iran. Anyway, point being is that, the system today is not what many people thought it was, including many women. Some of the restrictive rules on women existed during the Shah's time. Not being able to leave the country without a husband's permission, that was a law that was in the Shah's time as well. So some of the laws, just, you know, inheritance laws, which were against the woman, those were also from the Shah's time. These were ancient rules and laws that the Islamic system didn't change. What the Islamic system changed for women was the obligatory head covering, and not just head covering, hijab and modest dress in general, plus not having the ability to have certain positions, although some people argue against it. Like, for example, a woman can't be president, although it's not clear if that's actually a law or not, but or a judge or stuff like that. So, yes, there was a diminution of women's rights, no question about it. But some of those rights that today people will argue, feminists will argue, those also existed under the Shah's time. Why didn't they protest then?
Just out of curiosity.
I mean, why didn't foreigners protest? I don't mean Iranians. Iranians always protested, yeah.
Right. Out of curiosity, that the testimony of a woman, was it worth half a man's during the Shah's regime as well?
That I don't know. I don't think so. No. That's an Islamic thing.
Right. I see.
Although the Shah's, a lot of the Shah's, I don't mean particularly Muhammad Reza Pahlavi, I mean the Shah's, plural.
Yeah.
A lot of the Shah's ruled and reigned took into account in their constitutions or in their, whether they had a constitution or not, in their laws, took into account Shia Sharia without actually calling it Sharia law.
Interesting. So you've often argued that it's sort of presumptuous for us in the West to assume that the best system for Iran would be liberal democracy akin to systems that exist in Europe and the US,
right.
And that democratic rule can be possible within an Islamic framework. And you've sort of alluded to the fact that currently we do have a democracy in Iran.
It's a flawed democracy.
Right, right. Can you elaborate on that? Because a lot of people, when they look at a system like that, they say, okay, fine, you have elections, but then at the end of the day, you are, you know, operating under a system that has an unelected body that has absolute say on everything, has veto power on everything, can eliminate anybody from running for office. And I mean, what does democracy mean then, right?
No, absolutely correct. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt. When I say that there is it's a form of democratic rule compared to, let's say, Saudi Arabia or compared to some other countries, it's not as democratic as even Turkey, just backsliding, but Iran is not even as democratic. Anybody would have to grant you that. But then again, you look at the millions of people who come out and vote enthusiastically, cheering and being happy about, like, for example, Rouhani's two elections, elections. And you go, well, those people aren't stupid. It's not like they don't know that there's a supreme leader. It's not like they don't know there's a guardian council. And yet they sincerely, or at least they believe enough that the system can moderate change, reform, be different than a previous president, for example, in order for them to come out and participate in those votes. So that's why I say there is some form of democracy. It's some form of democratic rule, because the system has to take into account the people's will as well. For example, in the time of Rouhani, there may have been, I mean, there's a lot of infighting, obviously, and there's like foreigners and dual nationals who were in prison and stuff like that, which were also during Ahmadinejad's time. But I think you would, other than the difficulties, the economic difficulties, and other than the JCPOA issues that exist with Trump and Iran, you'd be hard-pressed to find an Iranian who doesn't prefer having this system than to the Ahmadinejad years. Although maybe that's changing now because of all the JCPOA stuff that's happening. But certainly the enthusiasm for Rouhani was there. And I think there was a more open... I haven't been to Iran since 2013, since Rouhani was elected. But from what I hear from people who are there or do come in, their biggest complaints tend to be economic and less so on social issues. There's more cafes, more restaurants, more, you know, liberalization in the social space than during Ahmadinejad. So I won't call it a democracy. That would be foolish to call Iran a pure democracy. But compared to many of the other countries surrounding it, and compared to certainly many Muslim countries, it's perhaps more democratic. The supreme leader, the Revolutionary Guard, they all have to take into consideration the person that the people voted for. I don't think you'd have any question that if Jalili had become president instead of Rouhani, the atmosphere inside Iran would be very different.
But aren't we just splitting hairs at this point? I mean, when you compare Rouhani to Ahmadinejad, obviously there's differences in everyday life and all of that. But if people were to be completely free and they could absolutely vote anybody into office,
right?
Who do you think that person would be? Would it be someone?
It'd be me.
yeah.
Better.
No. I guess my point is, do you think that people may vote for someone who's secular? That at the same time would give them religious freedom and all of that, but at the same time would be sort of like, okay, everybody live their own lives, you know?
Yeah, I think at this point people would vote for whoever they thought would give them economic benefits rather than anything else at this point, because people are actually suffering and want to see, you know, sanctions end and stuff like that more than anything else right now. I mean, protests tend to be about sanctions, I mean, about the economy more than anything else. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. In America, if we were, you know, if we didn't have a primary system and we didn't have to, you know, choose between Democrats and Republicans every single time, because that's just the way it works now, there's a two-party system, would Americans vote for someone from the outside? I mean, I think, you know, maybe Bernie Sanders proved that, you know, people might be willing to go out and vote for someone who doesn't come from inside that political system. I would imagine, yes, because I don't think the vast majority of Iranians are 100% satisfied with the status quo in Iran. I would have to imagine that people would vote for someone who says they're secular. I think under the current system, that can't happen, because if someone says they're secular, they'd be disqualified from running if they want a secular republic. People like Khatami, who don't say they want a secular republic, but are as close to being secular in the sense that they themselves are religious but don't believe in imposing the religion on other people, he probably won't be allowed to run again if he tried, to run. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the answer is a very difficult question to answer, because we don't really know. It's hard to judge. But I think within the system, it wouldn't be possible, because someone can't come out and say, we need a secular government. Then you're talking about a revolution, not reform. Within the system, though, I do think someone who goes further away from religiosity, if you want to call it, which is something that even Rouhani has said publicly on occasion, that, you know, we shouldn't impose religion, we shouldn't impose people, our beliefs on other people, which I think is part of the reason he's popular. Whether he's sincere about it is another question, or whether he, even if he is sincere, if he has the ability to change it to the point where, you know, a woman can walk down the street without a headscarf, or that a boy and girl can hold hands and or do a happy video, you know, and not get arrested, or do an Instagram where they're dancing and not get arrested. Obviously, the Rouhani government, this government that the people voted for, is for those freedoms. It has said so many times, it's come up against the judiciary many times. So I think the answer to your question is in the answer to how Rouhani got elected, and how those young women and young men, boys and girls really, came out and voted for him and celebrated on the streets of Iran. I think because they thought within this system he was the best alternative to provide them with those freedoms and rights that they desire, no question. Yeah.
Yeah. So what would progress look like at this point?
I don't know. I don't know the answer. Where can the system go from here? I mean, Iran is now facing a bunch of issues and problems that it didn't anticipate. And this is the removal of the United States from the JCPOA, the imposition of sanctions, the very harsh language coming from the United States, John Bolton as national security advisor, forming policy on Iran, which is an aggressive policy. And these are things that neither the government nor the people of Iran expected. That's one thing. Where can it go from here? If none of those things existed, if the JCPOA was delivering, if new aircraft were being delivered to Iran, if all these companies were doing business in Iran, these foreign companies, if, you know, you could have an Apple store in Tehran, I mean, then where would it go from there? I think naturally the progression would be towards a more liberal society over time. And I think had the JCPOA delivered what was promised, and probably overpromised by this government, the Rouhani government, to the people, I think it was just natural that even some of the people who would be against liberalization and would be against opening up to the West because of the fear of Western influence would be forced to stand back and recognize that progress for Iran, this was progress for Iran, and would have to continue. Where does it go now? I mean, I think what we're doing is we're empowering the most hardline people in Iran right now, who are saying, told you so, you can't trust the Americans. Now we got to buckle up and just unify and stand against America, and anybody who objects is a traitor.
But yeah. Don't people see through that a little bit? Because, of course, America has something to do with it.
Some people do, sure. A lot of people do. But it also gives an excuse to people, whether it's the Revolutionary Guard, the Basij, or whatever, to crack down in the name of national security. Listen, in America, we do things in the name of national security that a lot of people object to. We did after 9/11. You know, in the name of national security, you can do a lot of shit, and get away with it. That's the main thing. Do you get away with it? It doesn't matter whether the majority of Iranians don't see through it or don't see through it. What matters is whether you can get away with it.
Yeah. So let's talk about the current administration and its Iran policy. Obviously, Iranians are against foreign intervention. Part of the character of the revolution was this standing up to America and to the West, as we talked about. So looking at what the Trump administration wants to do, it reinstituted a new round of sanctions. There's new sanctions going into effect later in the year. What is its ultimate goal with these activities?
Well, I think there's probably, I mean, just my guess, because I don't know that we know. I mean, on the one hand, you've got the Trump administration spokesman, all of them, including John Bolton, saying regime change is not what they what they're after. What they're after is changing in the regime's behavior. And then, you know, I think there's different things. I think Donald Trump himself probably wants to make a deal with Iran. I don't think he cares very much about social freedoms. I don't think he cares about democracy that much. He'd like to make a deal that he considers his deal, a nuclear deal with Iran, and would be happy to have relations with Iran. I'm talking about Donald Trump, the person.
Right, right.
Then you've got an administration, and you've got people like Mike Pompeo and John Bolton, who probably would like to see regime change. Whether they would like to see that happen with American interference or naturally, organically, by putting so much pressure on the regime that it collapses, I don't know. I mean, they say that they're not after regime change, but what they're demanding of Iran is essentially regime change, because this regime would never give. You know, this system would never give in to the demands, the 12 demands of Pompeo. That would be giving up your sovereignty. Yeah. As far as the regime and many of its even non-supporters would argue, and wouldn't want to Iran to give up its sovereignty. But I suspect, based on the language that they have used in the past before joining this administration, that people like Pompeo and like Bolton would like to see regime change and would be happy to have America be involved in bringing that about. But I think the system, the American system, doesn't allow that at this time. There isn't if Trump said, that's my policy, regime change, like, you know, Obama saying Assad must go, then suddenly the United States can start arming rebels in Syria. It can do the same thing in Iran, you know. Yeah. But that hasn't been the policy, and I don't think there's an agreement on that yet. So in answer to your question, I think the administration hasn't figured out an Iran policy yet. I think there are people in the administration who would like to see a policy, and we're going down a road which is leading to that. And then Trump throws in, you know, a wrench into the whole thing by saying, I'll talk to Rouhani one-on-one with no preconditions. So that just, you know, is a whole other issue. So that's why I think that Trump himself may not have a specific goal in mind with Iran, other than the fact he thinks the nuclear deal is an awful deal and he can do a better one.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's switch gears to the role of the diaspora. You've written that thinking that the Iranian diaspora holds the solution to Iran's political problem is laughable to most people. And that sort of resonates with me, because when I was in Iran in 2015, and when I would talk to people and try to understand their problems, I felt like I lived on a different planet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And for me to sort of say, no, this is what you need to do, and this is what you need, would be really misguided in a sense.
Well, the first thing I would say is that, you know, this is largely a voluntary diaspora, people who voluntarily left Iran.
Right.
Largely. There are people who left for political reasons, obviously, and were, you know, would get arrested if they went back. But largely it's a voluntary diaspora who left, not necessarily a civil war. We're not really refugees. Iranians came here slowly, opportunity, work, whatever, and slowly built a life outside of Iran. And their kids, like yourself, are pretty much American. But I just don't feel I've lived abroad, I'm, you know, over 60 years old, and I've lived abroad my entire life practically. I don't give myself a right to tell the Iranian people who live there and have suffered through war, through sanctions, economic problems, you know, all those things that they have had to deal with. I don't give myself a right to tell them what I think the way they should live. That's the first thing. The second thing is, the people I have talked to in Iran, people I did, some of them are like, you know, even the ones who despise this regime and want it gone. If you tell them that if you talk about the diaspora, say, if these people in L.A. and these people in, you know, Washington, Iranians, they mean,
yeah,
think that we're going to make a revolution and they're going to come here and suddenly get their old houses back and get all their life back. And, you know, having lived in luxury over there, of course, they don't know that people don't necessarily live in luxury in the West. But there's this perception. You guys are like, you think you're going to come back and rule this country? No way. You know, this is going to be a closed place for you guys. You guys have chosen to go. Now, we who have suffered here, we who will fight for reform, change, revolution, whatever you want to call it, we're the beneficiaries, not you.
Yeah.
And I understand that. I understand that. Why should we think that we're going to go back and have a say in the affairs of Iranians?
Yeah, but does that mean that we just can't do anything to help Iranians? I mean,
no, that doesn't mean that at all. It means we can do a lot to help Iranians, but we can do things that I think, at least, I'm not a member of any organization, actually. But I'm not a member of, for example, NIAC. I know they get a lot of criticism from Iranians who believe in democracy and all that. But I think that they do some good work because their purpose is to lobby the American government or whatever you want to call it to in support of Iranian Americans. And it happens that Iranian Americans, many of them have family in Iran and want to help Iranians and don't want to see them suffer. Shortage of medicine, all those kinds of stuff. So I think there is stuff we can do to help Iran by putting pressure on our governments. If you're European, by putting pressure on your government to not do things that affect the ordinary people. Even if you hate the regime, do you really want ordinary Iranians to suffer? Do you really want them to not be able to fly in safe airplanes? Do you want them to not have medicine? Do you want them to die of cancer because they can't get radiation? I mean, if you're an Iranian who lives in Germany, put pressure on your government. If you're an Iranian who lives in America, you should be able to put pressure on your government. And I think Iranians do actually appreciate that, who live in Iran. And most of us have some family, either distant or close family, who still live in Iran, and we don't want to see them suffer either. And I think when we go out and, you know, demonstrate in support of Iranians, whether it was for the Green Movement and Iranians' right to elect the president they want, and if they believe that there's fraud, that should be investigated properly rather than throwing the leaders into prison or house arrest, then those are the kinds of support I think that Iranians abroad can do. But what I don't think we can do is say, let's have, you know, the Shah return. Let's have the MEK take over. Let's have Houman Majd be president. As much as I would like to be, I welcome all support. I don't think I have the right to ask for that, nor do I have the right to tell the Iranian people that there should be some system that I devise. Or when I say I mean, you know, the Iranian diaspora devises for them.
Yeah. As you know, the diaspora is really divided, right? You mentioned Reza Pahlavi, you mentioned the MEK, and then there are people that are pro-reform, so they sort of go at it. You've received your fair share of criticism.
Sure.
People point to your family connection to Mohammad Khatami. Yeah. Sure. You've been open about that. You've been a translator for Iranian presidents that have come to the U.S. You talk about how you sort of fell into that. You never received any payments from the government. Your grandfather was a prominent Ayatollah. That all of that sort of makes you biased, that you may think more highly of the Islamic Republic as a system than it deserves to be thought of. And you've certainly been critical of the regime at times when you need it to be. But what is your response to that kind of criticism?
You're going to be criticized no matter what you do. Once you're a public figure, no matter what you say, I can't help that. Am I more willing to give the Islamic system a break? No, I'm an observer. That's what I am. I don't claim to be an academic. I'm not defending the Islamic system. I do defend Iran as a nation. I believe they have a right to be. Iran has a right to be an independent nation and to be independent from, to be not dependent on another, a greater power's benevolence. Listen, I mean, in terms of family, yes, I've had family. Like many Iranians, we had family on both sides of the revolution. My father was dismissed as an ambassador of the Shah. He was ambassador to Tokyo at the time of the revolution. We lost everything. My dad never got another job in his life. He died not penniless, but not a wealthy man at all, living in a small one-bedroom apartment in London, former ambassador of the Shah. So if I wanted to be critical of the regime that fired my father, never paid his retirement money, never paid his pension, nothing, when he worked for 40 years for the government of the Shah's government, or 30 years or whatever it was, I have every right to be angry at the system. But you have to put aside your personal feelings if you're going to be an observer, at least in my opinion. I was going to be an observer when I started writing about Iran. I was going to be an observer of the Iranian scene, inside Iran mostly. And I do happen to have connections with some of the people in the revolutionary government because part of my family were revolutionaries. Not my father, obviously. He was on the opposite side. My uncle had to escape Iran dressed as a woman and had a death sentence against him. So, I mean, you know, I have that history too. this is not an excuse for what I've written, because I stand by everything I've written. But as I said, as someone who grew up in the West, I don't give myself the right to say, oh, the Islamic system's horrible. The Islamic system has been very bad for my immediate family, my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, and me, when I say that in terms of, but it's been fine for some of my other family, including people like, you know, Khatami and people like that. But I just don't give myself the right to decide what is correct for Iran. It goes without saying, the fact that I live here and not in Iran, that I live as an American in America, in Brooklyn, as you point out, means that I prefer this system, right? Otherwise, I'd go back to Iran.
Sure.
So my preference is to live in a secular democracy. That doesn't mean just because it's my preference, it has to be the preference of every Iranian. So that's the only thing I can say. But no, in terms of criticism, sure, because people in, you know, Pahlavi supporters who, you know, troll me, or MEK who troll me on Twitter and, you know, say how awful I am, I'm a regime apologist. And that's a nice thing they say about me, is that I'm a regime apologist. Otherwise, I'm an agent who got money and, you know, drives a Ferrari courtesy of the foreign minister of Iran, stuff like that. I mean, what can you say to those people? I can't say anything to them. They're just as intolerant, as far as I'm concerned, they're just as intolerant of any other opinion as some people back in Iran are in the government, are intolerant of other people's opinion. I've just tried throughout the time that I've either done journalism or been an author of books on Iran, I've just tried to present, you know, what I see.
Yeah.
More than anything else. When you said earlier on, you asked me earlier on, it's interesting how I have all kinds of people I go and see in Iran. It's because I want to show all of Iran, not just one side. You know, I don't want to just see the people in Qom. I don't just want to see only the political figures and then talk about how great the political system is. I want to say, this is Iran with all its, you know, the subtitle of my book was The Paradox of Iran. I don't like that word that much because too many people use it, like Iranian paradox and all that. And I didn't come up with that title. It's the publisher always comes up with the subtitle. but my editors did. But my point is that, you know, I just want to show what I wanted to show with my first book, what Iran was from that sort of social and political aspect. And then, you know, my second book was highly critical. Islamic democracy was, the Ayatollah's democracy was very critical of, because it was written about the Green Movement more than anything else, very critical of the system. So, but I can't help it if people don't like what I say.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you haven't been back since 2013. Is there a reason for that?
I can't go.
Can you share why not? Or?
I don't know why not. I think you'd have to ask the authorities why. I've been told I shouldn't go.
I see.
Put it that way.
Because of the book?
Because of books, yeah, and writings. And, you know, I'm accused of the same things that the Iranian diaspora accused me of being an agent of the Islamic Republic. Some people in Iran accuse me of being an agent of the United States. So
that's a good sign. You get it from all sides.
Yeah, one does get it from all sides. You know, when they start accusing Jason Rezaian being an agent of the Islamic Republic, then you really know what kind of people we're dealing with in the diaspora. I don't know. I've been interrogated in the past. I've written about it in my book that I've been interrogated in Iran. I've had, you know, situations in Iran, but I've been told I shouldn't go.
Yeah, yeah. So before I let you go, any new projects you're working on now?
Specific projects? Yeah, I'm working on a fiction book. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Cool. I've written some nonfiction. I've written some short stories have been published, but this will be hopefully a longer form. But yeah, that's it.
You're jack of all trades. You're quite a fashion icon as well. From
master
what I hear.
Of none. Jack of all trades, master of none. No, I'm not a fashion icon. Not at all.
All right, Human, you've been very generous with your time. Really appreciate it. Very insightful
stuff. My
pleasure.
Stuff. It's very nice to talk to you. Good to meet you as well. Good luck with this.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Hope to run into you again.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Before we end the episode, I wanted to ask something of those of you who listened in today. In order for me to keep working on this podcast and for it to be sustainable, I would need it to reach a critical mass of listeners. So if you in fact find it to be interesting and productive and would like to see it grow and evolve, please share it on social media, blog about it, review it, or simply tell others about it. My goal is to keep things interesting and not just focus on current events. That is what I'm focusing on right now because there's a lot happening with Iran, as you know. But at some point, I would like to invite people with different backgrounds to discuss Iran and Iranians from cultural, historical, and other perspectives as well. So your support in sharing and talking about this project would be highly appreciated, and it would really help me along that path. So thanks again for your continued support, and take care.